everybody. This is Armand Demel with you with The Positive Mind. WBAI 99.5 FM in New York. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And it's just remarkable, you know, the amount of stuff we continue to learn. Today an interesting article appeared in the New York Times. One that I was familiar with and reported on a little while ago. The article was called This Can't Be Love. And it said, it talked about this gruesome ritual of some of the creatures in our planet. Here I'll quote, the praying mantis and its relative, the Chinese mantis, are in their courtship season. A male mantis approaches a female, flapping his wings and swaying his abdomen. Leaping on her back, he begins to mate. And quite often, she tears off his head. The female mantis devours the head of the still mating male and then moves on to the rest of his body. An observer said, if you put a pair of them together and come back later, you'll find just the wings of the male and no other evidence that he was ever there. Sexual cannibalism, it's called. And it's true with many other species. And it's where specifically the female eats the male, right? Devours him after or during mating. Now, during mating is kind of interesting because there is some very obvious signs lately that men have a penchant for coming near death, like some men like asphyxiation during sex. Other men like being strangled. Some men like to be squeezed around the middle. You know, there's just a whole bunch of things that kind of link to a male preference for kind of having a female really bring him near a death experience. Well, that's kind of interesting. And the reason why I found the article so interesting is because I was looking at another article, another book that someone had sent me for review, and it said clearly in this book, men fall in love with women much more than women fall in love with men. And I don't know how this woman, psychologist, made this up. But it's nothing that I had seen. She had no statistics to back it up because in my observation, it's not the men who fall in love, but it's the women who fall in love and the men who fall in lust. You know, the men seem to have a more organic sexual reaction to women, and the women have both a sexual reaction and a romantic reaction at the same time. Looking for bonding just seems natural, seems the way nature meant it to be. But it leads me to the question that many people perceive that men, and it's a question now, men hate women. It's the only way you could look at it. You know, you've got to figure it out. And a lot of the behavior that women look at to evidence this concept is that, you know, a man kind of uses a woman for sex and then junks her, dumps her. You know, it's like that's what they're good for. He'll seduce and he'll dump it. And a lot of the women who make the claim that men hate women are women who feel vulnerable to men, who feel like they need a man for something, and they've just been hurt over and over again by deceptions that they've gotten, and they've gotten maybe because they invited the deceptions, but when a man is turned on to a woman sometimes, and a woman flirts with him in return, sometimes a man says things he doesn't mean. You know, if a woman is saying, okay, you know, if you tell me you love me, you could have it. And the man says, oh, okay, I love you, you know. I mean, so that could be both people. But is it a matter of a kind of a hatred? Is it? It's an interesting question. Do men really feel such a resentment for women being the owners of the prize? You know, being the one thing that they seem to have been so biologically bent on having, which is, I've got to have sex. And the men feel this sexual drive, and the only thing that gets in their way is the woman's right to deny them. So they have, you know, they want to have it. They have the impulse, and this is the way nature built it. You know, I know Roberta and I reported on what happened some millions of years ago when women first learned that, you know, when the female species first learned that they were giving birth or they were getting pregnant and not having abdomens big enough to birth the child, so they were dying in childbirth. They were dying, you know, as they got pregnant, they were too young. So in order for the species to survive, what the female had to figure out is how to stop the man from doing it. How to stop the man from just using them at any age and having sex with them. And women developed a way of stopping men from having sex with them randomly. And as a result of that, our species survived. The woman's no saved our species. It really did. If you want to hear more about that, you can go back on our website and look up human sexuality, the history of it. The beginning of it is terrific. It's terrific information. Misogyny, that's the word, M-I-S-O-G-N-Y, misogyny, is hatred or strong prejudice against women. Well, I mean, why did we start this off with women biting off men's heads? You know, is there the equivalent of misogyny? Yes, they call it misogyny. No. Misandry. Misandry. Equal to or the equivalent of, supposedly made. Now, both of these terms, misandry and misogyny, came around in the 60s as the women's movement was growing. And at first, as they were growing, they tried to point out that there seemed to be a basic dislike for women coming from the men as the women were trying to break through glass ceilings, you know. And they were saying, you know, hey, I want to be able to stand up too. And they kept getting oppressed by men, putting them down, and they developed the word misogyny. It doesn't go back before the 60s. And misandry was the male response to being called misogynists. They said, no, women hate men. Men don't hate women. Now, I don't know who's right or who's wrong, but one thing I know is the fact that we have both of these phrases, misogyny and misandry, in our culture means that somewhere people really believe that sexes hate each other. Is it true? Is it true? Is it a matter of hatred? Well, there's a Chinese proverb that says there are three truths: my truth, your truth, and the truth. That's what we're going to try to look for today. I don't think I'm going to be able to come up with an answer and say which is which, but I'm certainly going to ask you some questions that you're going to help me explore. Let's go over some definitions. There are men who love women, you know. I guess we'll call that philia, right? Misophilia. Nobody made that up, but it would be misphilia, love of. M-Y-S, sure, Miss Philia. And, or androphobia, you know, now we have other words. We have misanthropy, which is hatred of people in general. You know, you just hate everybody. You know, misanthropic people are people who walk around just disliking everybody. Misogyny, as we said, hatred of strong prejudice against women. And then there's misandry, which is a contempt for men. So it goes a little further than that, you know, if you look at it, just in definitions. Androphobia is the fear of men. Now, androphobia and misandry obviously can go together. But if misandry is a hatred of men and androphobia is the fear of men, the two of them could go together because, you know, we often hate the thing we fear the most. There are a couple of other words, gynophobia, which is fear of women. Now, this becomes very interesting when you consider men and the needs that they have. Gynophobia means you're afraid of women. Now, maybe if you're afraid of women, that's why you gotta be misogynist. Dick, right. Misogynistic, right? You have to be misogynistic because you fear women. So if you fear them, maybe you got to wipe them out. There's a couple of other interesting words in psychiatry that I thought you might enjoy. Calignophobia. Yes, calignophobia, an interesting word. Or venustrophobia. Those are two words, calignophobia, venustrophobia. Write them down. Fear of beautiful women. specifically women who are beautiful, whatever that is, because I don't know. To one man, what's as beautiful is, you know, one man's poison is often another man's wife. Gamophobia. Gamophobia is an interesting word. What does gamophobia mean? Fear of marriage. Yep. There's even philophobia. That's fear of Phil. Oh, no, that's fear of love. I always thought claustrophobia was a fear of Santa Claus. Okay, now, strangely, now, this is an interesting thing. They did a survey, and they said, what is men's greatest fear? And this is a fairly well-done survey, right? This is, of all the phobias, which one appeared the most in men? Now, this may not be men's greatest fear, because a phobia is more than a fear. A phobia is such an intense thing. It's a giant aversion. You know, it means you can't go anywhere near it. It scares the hell out of you. But I think if we look at phobias, we could look at fears right underneath phobias, you know, that people very often, if you see their phobias, you see their fears related to it because it's closely related. Like a person's fear of traveling, if they have a phobia, it might be a fear of leaving their mothers. You see, so the fears and the phobias are often related. Men's greatest fear. You want to think about it? Men's greatest fear. And then I'm going to ask you, women's greatest fear. And the reason I found these so fascinating is because men's greatest fear is taphophobia, T-A-P-H-E-B-phobia, P-H-O-B-I-A. Taphophobia, what could that mean, T-A-P-H-E-P-H-O-B-I-A? The first 15 people who call in will get tickets. No, okay. I wish I could do that, actually. Taphophobia. Taphophobia, men's greatest fear. By the way, women's greatest fear is ophidiophobia. And I'm going to go into that in a moment. Ophidiophobia. But I want you to think about this. I want you to think about men's greatest fear and how it relates to men and misogyny and how it relates to men's fear of women. You know, gynophobia. Think about it. Men's greatest fear. Here it is. Taphophobia, the fear of being buried alive. What a thing. What a thing, the fear of being buried alive. Today, this is the greatest fear of all men. The greatest phobia, the biggest one out there, fear of being buried alive. Well, how could that be? You know, there used to be a time when this was a very good fear, because before medicine really came about, you know, there was a good chance that somebody would be perceived as dead and buried, you know, and they'd come to life somewhere 6 feet under the ground. That's where they developed the bell, you know, the little thing about the bell, bury me with a bell. Sure, back in the old days, when you buried somebody, you put a line down into their casket with a bell above ground, that if the person came back to life, they would ring the bell. Yeah. They'd ring the bell, and they'd be, you know, coming back to life. Kind of interesting, especially on a real breezy night in a cemetery. Yeah, absolutely. They make it up not. Men's greatest fear is the fear of being buried alive. Does that mean that men have a greatest fear of being suffocated? Could that be? Do you think it's a suffocation fear? You think it's a suffocatophobia or something like that? You think it's something like that? Do you think it's related in some way, or do you think it's because of the old days, people being buried alive? Well, women don't have that as their biggest fear. No, men have this as their biggest fear. And I think about men, and I think about men in collectives, and I think about men in relationships, and I think about the complaints that many men have about relationships. They feel smothered. Yes, they feel smothered. They feel drawn in. They feel dragged down. They feel like the kids and the mortgage and the house and their wives and the demands of being there has just smothered them. It's buried them alive. And men often talk about their greatest complaint being that there is just too much of their lives is given away to everybody else. You know? And they talk about it. They talk about it. They can't breathe in their own house. midlife crisis seems to be a bell ringing time, you know? Seems to be a time when a guy just suddenly says, I can't take it anymore. I got to get out of everything. I got to leave my wife. I got to get a new Jaguar. I mean, what else are you going to do? Or get an old Jaguar if you can't afford a new one. So what am I, the point I'm making is that men's greatest fear is the fear of being alive. I think it relates to this whole subject we're talking about. We're going to go much more into misogyny and misandry. Women's greatest fear, ophidiophobia. Now, if men's greatest fear is a fear of being smothered, let's take that back a little further. Do you ever hear of a rollover baby? A rollover baby is a baby who gets smothered alive by its mother's breasts. Because mother rolls over while holding the baby in the bed. And they used to hold the baby right next to them, and they would just roll over, and the baby would die from being smothered to death. You think babies have to have some kind of a protection against that? You know, a reaction? They have some fear. Why male babies? Why don't female babies have it? Maybe mothers tend to hold their male babies closer than they do their female babies. I don't know. But so if we have male's greatest fear, and my theory is that the fear of being buried alive is intrinsic, basic to men's psychology. That if you look at men and you listen to men in relationships, you know, the people who have, what was that one particular fear that I love so much? Gamophobics. The gamophobics, fear of being buried alive, fear of marriage, right? Fear of love, philophobia. Fear of being buried alive. Underneath it. My hypothesis. My theory. Just mine. Nobody else's. This is not science. It's speculation. Women's greatest fear. This is a killer. I mean, I don't want to draw any parallels to this, or I don't want to say it has anything to do with men. But women's greatest fear. Number one fear of ophidiophobia. Fear of snakes. Yep. Fear of those big, long, slimy things. They somehow, you know, they did a movie about snakes and aircraft. What was that movie they just did? Just created some movie about, you know, how you would have these snakes falling out of an airplane and they were in the airplane while people are trapped inside and the snakes had come down. Nobody went to the movie. The movie bombed. I'm not so sure it was because the movie was snake. I mean, Anaconda was another giant snake movie. And it had its own form of bombing, except on television it became a cult thing. Do women hate men? Do men hate women? Are women afraid of men? Is really fear of snakes fear of men? Snakes have always been the symbol of masculinity and manhood and, you know, male parts. So we're going to look at it today. What do you think? I want to ask you your opinion. Misogyny comes in many forms, you know. It could be hate or strong prejudice against women openly stated. You openly hate all women. I hate women. I can't stand women. And there are a few guys out there, believe it or not, who are like that. Hate them, you know, hate them. I mean, I actually hate them so much that I just have this disdain for them. And yes, I may use them for sex. I may use them for cleaning the house, but I hate them. And there are men, even cultures, who seem to reflect this. You know, they seem to hold misogynistic views, and we know of those cultures. There are some cultures that just treat women like they're dirt. There are some cultures that kill female babies, you know, because they're so less valued. But the anti-woman sexism, it's usually, okay, so there are different levels of it. There are many forms of it. I was going back another form maybe. Then it's more subtle. Some misogynists may simply be prejudiced against all women. And they may hate women who don't fall into one or two acceptable categories. So now, let's say, you know, you say, it's okay, I can have her, she's as good as a wife, she's good as this, but she's not good if she does this or does that. If she opposes me, I don't accept her. But otherwise, I accept women if they stay in their role. And then there's the famous Madonna whore complex. which is a woman can either be either a divine mother to me, or she can be only a whore to me. She can only be used for sex. And that's the only other, those are the only two usages that I have, and all women fall somewhere between those two in that dichotomy. Each culture seems to treat women differently, and some of the cultures, I think probably America has got some of the finest attitudes, you know? Some of the best attitudes, because we have some of the strongest population of women who are fighting for their own rights. I think more here than almost anywhere else. A misogynist can also be a man who considers himself a great lover of women. Therefore, might paradoxically be termed a misogynist, even though he's a Don Juan, you know what I mean? An archetype of this kind of man could be Casanova, Don Juan. While he's a seducer, the whole object was the conquest. See, the whole object was to beat you. I knew a man who used to talk about his prowess with women and his famous prowess for being able to bring a woman to orgasm. And so, as a therapist, I was asking him, what's the big deal about your ability to do this? He said, that's more important to me than anything. He says, I don't care if I don't have an orgasm. I must bring the woman to orgasm. I said, so I asked him to describe in detail what it's like for him. He says, I can't. He says, when they start moaning and they start losing control and then they are start completely, he said, I will have them have orgasm after orgasm after orgasm. He said, and then I know they're completely wiped out. And I keyed in on the word wiped out. Well, wiped out, why would you want to wipe out a woman? Because then they're powerless. Then they can't hurt me. And then, in some way, I own them. Interesting thing. Now, I know women who have talked about men that way. I know women who have said, if I could get that man to have sex with me, then that man has no power. I will have power over that man. Is this misogynistic? Is this misandristic? Is it misandristic? 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 I'm trying to learn the word. So we're going to be taking your calls in a little bit after. I want to hear from you. Now, I know if the feminists are up there, they're going to be up there saying, oh, boy, you know, this is a typical thing men really are. You know, there's a belief among many people that men are just basically evil. And even the word Chauvin, you remember Nicholas Chauvin was a fanatical admirer and soldier of Napoleon? You know, and he had this, he harbored these irrational and boastful contempts towards others who did not share his views. So the character Chauvin, you know, chauvinism in French language, is like somebody who is, you know, just boasts too much. Male chauvinist pig became a usage of chauvinism to describe men who are stuck on this male role. Both terms, as I said, developed in the 60s. So here's what some of the misandrists seem, some of the people who are defending themselves against accusations of misogyny, of being women haters, say about women who they call misandrists. And they say a person with misandry has an act, a desire, or apt to subjugate or oppress or punish or harm or injure or murder a male because of his gender. Now, if we said this about misogynists, we could say the very same thing. A desire or act to subjugate or oppress or punish or harm or injure a female. The number two, the absolute belief that no father can be a fit parent, no matter what he does. It is the belief that men, that masculinity, male physiology, male hormones, cause men to become evil, sexually abusive, oppressive, and violent. It's the belief that every male is potentially sexually abusive and violent. It's the attribution of negative qualities and humanity's historic evils to the entire male gender. And what it does is it ignores, I mean, I almost agree with all of it, you know, but it ignores female culpability. It ignores where was the woman in all of this. You know, where is the woman in all of this? It makes it only one person and not the other. It makes it, we make it like it's a, it's exclusively the men doing it. And it has nothing at all to do with the women. Well, I'm not sure. But, you know, you have attitudes towards it. And when you call in, what I'm going to do is I'm going to try to take your questions and not express a judgment or even do any. I want to hear what you have to say about it. And we may hear some people calling and really railing, you know, and saying, you know, it's men are horrible or women are horrible or whatever it is. And I'm not going to correct anybody. I want to call, I want to hear from your calls, what your attitude is. Now, of course, we are talking to people who listen to WBAI, and this is a very skewed audience, because this audience is the most progressive, intelligent audience, I think, in the world. I think the people who listen to WBAI and the people who want the information, the people who are here and not subject to just being sold any bill of goods. Really fascinating. I saw a movie the other day called V for Vendetta. You know, it's a very interesting movie. If you think of it as a parody on our current government, it kind of is, even though it has some points of violence to it. Somebody pointed me to it. And I know it's rentable. I know it's a easily accessed movie. But it kind of points to the whole scheme of things. And in this environment, in this political environment we have nowadays, WBAI is a harbor. It's a place. It's a place that you tune in to hear something different, something right, something that, like we said, there's my truth, there's your truth, and there's the truth. It may not all be accurate, what we have to say, but we certainly have some opinions that I think are not affected by, number one, the government, number two, our ratings, and number three, our sponsors who pay. I remember I once worked for a program, a radio station that had sponsors. And I was told what I was allowed to say, what I wasn't allowed to say, and how to sell cat food. And I had to give live. There was a thing, they said, you have to do live commercials. And I said, what do you mean live commercials? I was going to tolerate the fact that there were going to be commercials. But the fact that they were live commercials meant that whoever the host is has to actually endorse the product. I got stuck. I had one I remember was Esso gasoline or something like Esso. You remember Esso? And the other one was for a really horrendous cat food. And I was being told I had to push these on the air as being delicious. I don't know which they meant was delicious. But I was being asked to do it, and I just, even though there was a pretty hefty paycheck, I said, I think I'll just crawl over to WBAI. You know, run over to BAI. So this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We have a special musical break for you today because you're going to hear something special. Something special that nobody else has ever heard. I mean, maybe a few people have heard. This is a 16-year-old young man whose name is Conrad Jones playing the trumpet. And Conrad Jones is a talent. I tell you, a talent. He plays a trumpet. So at first you're going to hear him play a regular open trumpet. Then you're going to hear him play a muted trumpet, which sounds like a different instrument, but it's not. And he's going to be playing one of my famous, my very favorite monk tunes, which I'm sure you will recognize. And so I'll be playing that right after our break. You stick with us. And Michael, of all people, Michael G. Haskins, this is where I believe Michael was a trumpet player, you know. Absolutely. So I kind of dedicate this to Michael G. Haskins in recognition of the work of Conrad Jones. Be back with you in just a couple of minutes. Oh, Isn't that sweet? That's Conrad Jones playing both trumpet parts, you know? Conrad Jones, I just learned he turned 17, so he's now 17 years old. I knew him when, but a WBAI's listener and supporter, and Cricket, pay attention. Cricket's this great bass player who's also part of our BAI audience. He likes to hook people up. You might have to grab this guy. Although I think he's already been, I know he's playing in a couple of clubs. Anywhere where people could go see this young man? And he's in Juilliard too, isn't he? On Saturdays? All right. Juilliard on Saturdays. I don't know how you get to listen to him. They perform at Carnegie Hall. They do, don't they? Well, this is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. Love, love, love to see talent coming around like that, especially young talent. I like old talent, too. Tomorrow I'm going to be doing a report on some of the scientific paradoxes. Yeah, I have this idea. Paradox. Our telephone number here is 212-209-2900. We were talking before that beautiful music about, maybe you didn't consider it beautiful, but I love that music, especially the Straight Note Chaser by Monk. Oh, my gosh. What an achievement. Anyway, we're talking about hatred of women, hatred of men. Do you really believe that they hate each other? Do you think they're afraid of each other? Do you think? Now, you know, your answer is going to come from your experience. Mind you, your answer about this is going to be a global answer. Men hate, women hate, and it's all going to be related to your dad, your father, you know, your mother. I mean, that's where you get your attitude. Spoke to a woman earlier today, and she said, you know, I just can't stand when women get upset. I can't stand. She said, I work, and every time I work, women get upset around me. They could just occupy my time. So I was doing therapy, and I said to her, I said, well, anybody ever get upset when you were a kid? And right away, sure, my mother was always upset. And every time my mother got upset, it dominated my life. It made me absolutely wracked. And so, you know, our attitudes about men and women really come from our parents. That's the beginning of it, you know. And then, let's say you had a good dad. And you're a good dad, and you're a woman who has a nice daddy, and you love your daddy. And so you wind up trusting a bunch of bad guys. And then these guys screw you over in some way. They take your money, you know, they steal your favorite bicycle. And they leave you and drop you and, you know, so on and so forth. So you pick bad guys because you're this openly trusting person and you wind up with a scarred heart and you say, men are bad. No, the men you picked are bad. Maybe. Or maybe men are bad. So we're going to take our survey today, 212-209-2900, women too. I mean, same thing about women. Are women evil, basically evil? I've spoken to enough men in private who would never admit to absolutely negative attitudes they have towards women in general. You know, they could talk about women as long as they talk about them sexually, but if they talk about them as people who demand some kind of equality or have needs, boy, you could really open up a bucket, a can of snakes. Exactly right. Buried under the ground, can of snakes. 212-20, that's my greatest fear, being buried under the ground with a can of snakes. 212-209, I like snakes, though, you see. 212-209-2900. I used to have a friend who had a snake in his house. And he had a really big guy. I don't know what it was. It may have been might have been a boa, you know. I did get nervous whenever that thing wrapped itself around me. And as it was about like a 7-foot thing, and it would just kind of go around my body. It was all nice and affectionate. I did just get this feeling that 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi there. Hi there. What's your name?
My name's Beth.
Hello, Beth.
Hi. You had one opinion on like hating the male or the female.
Yeah, what do you think, Beth?
Well, for myself, I've learned that it's hating both sides of myself.
Ah, tricky stuff. Starting off at the beginning with knowledge. I like this. Yeah, go ahead. Talk about that.
I'm just trying now in my life to learn that my male side, I have to embrace, like, the parts of me that I was taught not to like, you know, being aggressive or being out in the world and wanting things. And it's hard. It's very difficult for me.
So, in effect, you're saying that you have had a lot of disdain for yourself or self-hatred because you've seen yourself as aggressive and wanting things and progressive and all these stuff that they usually attribute to males.
Right.
And so you would look at that and you would say, why are you being so pushy? Why are
Right, and I'd push it down. And now I'm learning that, you know, I need those things to survive.
Yep, it does seem to make sense that the marriage of our male and female parts, although there are an awful lot of people who would deny having any parts that are opposite their own gender,
right.
You know, but it's an interesting choice on your part. How about your woman part? What about that? What did you have difficulty with in accepting your female gender?
The female side, both, like, just nurturing of myself is the feminine side, and it's not been permitted, and I've had to stand up for that, which would be, you know, the male side having to stand up for the female side. So it's kind of, you know, the dichotomy of the two and really understanding them, it's a process.
Well, thanks for calling in. I certainly thank you for that. You kind of jumped the gun because that's exactly, I imagined, what we must be going through. Recently, we did some programs about the opposite side of your personality. I recommend people going into the archives and listening to those programs if you have interest for that. Did you hear those?
Yes, they were brilliant. Thank you for airing them.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for calling in. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi, this is Dale from Connecticut.
Hello, Dale from Connecticut. How's your, any trees falling on you?
No, well, we had a little cherry tree fall over, but we propped it back up.
Another cherry tree falling over. I've heard a lot about cherry trees falling over.
Yeah.
You know, what part of Connecticut are you in?
Oh, Bridgeport.
Yeah, yeah. That was a pretty big storm that swept through your neighborhood, wasn't it?
It was very windy, yeah.
Yeah. I think there's something about the trees in Connecticut this year that have grown a little bigger over the summer than most of the trees did because they seem more vulnerable.
Well, if we planted trees closer together like they should be, I think they'd stop the winds. They, you know, the wind is not as vigorous if it's in a forest. And I think it's all this one tree here and one tree there that makes them vulnerable.
Well, that's quite a statement about the human race. I think you're absolutely right. It's the same thing with people. It's people's isolation that makes them really vulnerable mm-hmm. and makes them blow over in the wind.
Oh,
if people could have learned to get a little closer together, have one person here and one person right next to it, you know, they'd be a little less vulnerable, don't you think?
Well, that's a very wise analogy on your part.
Hmm. Yeah. So tell me about your feeling about men and women.
Well, I have two comments. If you'll allow me, I'll try to make as brief as I can.
Sure, Dale.
One of them is it's not really equal. You know, I mean, there are some individual men that don't like women. There are some individual women that don't like men. But the history, I'll just limit it to this culture, is one of terrible misogyny against women. Going back to the religion where women are evil and should be suffering. And, you know, I mean, if you look through the whole history, it was just recently we got the vote and blah, blah, blah. I don't have to go into all that. But the other thing was, there's an event that I experienced which was really eye-opening to me about men's attitude toward women. I was in a talking group a long time ago, and it was about 20 men, and they had done this with other women in the group also, but I hadn't been in it. And when it came my time, they got me up on a blackboard, and they said, okay, now list this and this and this. It was all men's accomplishments, Leonardo da Vinci and this and that and the other thing. And I listed them all, and then they said, okay, now say that men are superior than to women. And at this point, I didn't know anything about feminism. I had no concepts, but I just, in my gut, I knew that one sex wasn't superior to another. So I said no. And they got mad at me, and then they had me do it over again. And I kept saying no, and they kept asking over and over to say that men are superior to women. I'll tell you, they were frothing. They were furious. They had worked themselves up into an absolute fury. And this was a cross-section of men. There were workers, there was a writer, there was a restaurateur, there was a lawyer, there was a doctor. You know, I mean, it was a cross-section of men. And they just became completely furious. And started to threaten. Well, luckily it was nonviolent situation. So,
well, Dale, back this up just a little for me. What kind of talking group has 20 men and one woman?
Well, there were other women in the group. There were a few other women in the group, but there were about, I'd say, 25 people in the group.
And you would say a talking group? Do you mean a therapy group?
It wasn't exactly therapy. It was like that, but it wasn't really therapy. It was a group where you could go in and get your feelings out and say anything you wanted, with the exception of you couldn't threaten physical violence.
Kind of interesting. I certainly hear what you're saying. That's kind of an amazing thing, to have that misogynistic kind of blurt, you know, happen, kind of boil over like that. It sounds like you had a meeting of the Ku Klux Klan, you know, and they just, nobody had hoods on.
Well, I would say so. Some of these men were my friends, you know. I mean, it was
now, Dale, let me take this, the one connection for this, okay, the one.
Yeah.
And I'm not denying, of course, your experience is a big experience. When did this happen, in the 60s, 70s?
Yeah.
Yeah, now, back then, a lot of this was going on, and, of course, it got taken to task by many activists. But going back in your own history, it sounded like you were an innocent, that you were somebody who didn't know any better. So I imagine your father played a big role in your life.
My father was very misogynistic.
Yeah,
and he didn't talk to me hardly at all.
So there you go. You know, I mean, and it is not saying that men are not misogynistic, but it is saying that when you start off with a dad who's misogynistic, boy, it sure makes other people really, it kind of almost pulls them out of the woodwork.
But you see, they had done this to other women. And
yeah, sure.
The same thing. So, in other words, I didn't take it personally, and I don't think it was meant personally.
Yeah, no, I understand.
It was because they had done the same thing to all the other women in previous groups that I hadn't been able to attend.
Amazing, amazing.
Yeah, it was a real, because from my point of view, I don't care who's superior. Superior doesn't even come up in my thinking. You know, I mean, there's.
Does your dad still talk to you or not talk to you? Is he gone?
He's deceased now.
He's gone.
Hmm. Yeah, but he did talk to me some before he died.
Yeah, it doesn't really solve much of the problem inside, does it?
Well, when you're growing up, you need it'd be nice to have a mother and a father.
Yeah. Well, Dale, thank you very much. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for hearing me out. I just thought this was such an important, it was such an important revelation.
I would love to get more information on that group because, you know, I'd love to track it down and see, oh, you know, where are you now? Where are these very same guys now? And do they remember this? You know, I would love to. Are any of them your friends?
Oh, I moved away. I moved cross country, and I really didn't. I cut ties with everybody in that group.
And where did this take place, in Wyoming?
California.
In California. Okay, thanks for calling in, Dale.
Thank you so much.
Sure, 212-209-2900. Keep the stuff coming. Now, I am not saying that women's perception of men is wrong. You know, I mean, when you have a misogynistic father. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Armand?
Yes.
My name is Denise. I've listened to your program for years. I just want to thank you.
Hiya, Denise. Nice to have you on the air.
I wanted to make a comment about the statement you made about the women's number one fear being of snakes.
Uh-huh.
And to me, that's very interesting because originally, snakes are a representation of the goddess and of feminine energy and power, and for it to be flipped into a male symbol, and then for women, for it to be the thing that women fear the most, is sometimes what I find in what I have found is that women fear their own power.
Well, that's a fascinating thought. Now, this goes back to what the other person was saying, which is fearing your own male side and trying to make peace with it.
Yeah.
That maybe the thing we fear the most is the thing we're the most attracted to.
Yeah.
That there is a part of us that wants to embrace that other side, and that's why we fear it. And women and embracing power is a very big deal. Actually,
yeah, yeah.
Men embracing power is a big deal, because what men do, I consider, is not embracing their true power.
Right.
They're just embracing their strength, you know, their, mm-hmm. that's a different thing.
Mm-hmm.
But a real sense of power, that's very interesting. That's a fascinating perception, Denise. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. 212-209-29. Does this mean? All right, let's take Denise's concept here. Let's push it a little further. This is Armand DeMille with you. Does that mean that men's fearing their own being buried beneath the earth is because men want to be smothered? That men want and are attracted to getting themselves lost in that kind of way? According to Denise's theory, it's very possible that the greatest fear we have could be the fears that we're the most attracted to. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille on the air with you. Hi there, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi Armand, it's Christina Sutrow from Maplewood, New Jersey.
Hi Christina from Maplewood.
How are you?
Good.
Well, me and my two young daughters are listening, and I said that I wanted to call in and answer Armand's question.
All right.
I've done a lot of thinking about this. And what I've come up with is that over the last, let's say, 100 years, women have evolved in many ways in terms of their roles in life and in society and even in the family. But at that same time, in the last 100 years, the same evolution has not occurred with men. In my opinion, what's happened is that men have almost become obsolete. And it's not that women hate men or men hate women. It's just we've sort of lost our partnership in what we're together to do.
It seems like what you're saying is that in order for this species to survive, both men and women have to change a little bit. We have to be as not as much a living by a biological imperatives, but more kind of moving, progressing in some kind of way. And I think what you're saying, Christine, is that you've seen women progress. You've seen them make the change. And the primary change they've made is to embrace both their male and female qualities. And women seem to have done that. And
yeah.
For men, they're much slower at doing that. Men have embraced their male qualities, and very few have embraced their more feminine qualities, very few. And so in that way, they've really fallen behind the development and developmental ratio of women. And
yes.
In that way, they're becoming obsolete.
Yes, there's very few purposes now left for men to fulfill in terms of life in general, because women now can just do everything. I mean, I often go out into the city with my girlfriends, and on the way in, I'll look at them and I'll say, do you realize that 50 years ago we couldn't do this without, you know, being looked at?
Well, how old were you 50 years ago?
I wasn't existent.
And no wonder you couldn't do it 50 years ago.
Let's say 75 years ago, you know, a car full of women couldn't go cruising into Manhattan to have a night out on the town.
That's really an amazing thing, and it's great that you celebrate that with your friends.
Yeah, yeah. But I don't think there's a hatred. I think there's more of a standoff about, you know, what am I doing and what are you doing and how are we helping each other? And if we're not, then let's just go our separate ways.
I understand. Well, I don't know if you have to go your separate ways. I'm still betting that there's going to be a way that you could find a union here. You know, find a connection. Because I think we all need each other. I think it's like the cherry trees, you know? If we're like the cherry trees, you just plant them too far apart, they're going to fall down and crush your car. You know, they're going to fall on top of your house when the storm comes. But put them a little closer together, and I think we'll be able to survive. This is Armand.
Let's hope so. And thank you very much for everything, Armand. We love listening to you.
Thank you, Christine.
Okay, have a nice day.
This is Armand DeMille with Conrad Jones in the background. Conrad Jones has no recordings yet, but I promise if you get on my mailing list, I'll let you know when he does. And I'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m. Be sure to tune in, my friends. You can go to the website, thepositivemind.com. You can mail this program to one of your friends somewhere if you want to. Be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m.
Are tuned.